This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening, good day to you for Wednesday, what is it, August 21st, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. Yes, it is the 21st, and we are just coming out of a full moon. Well, apparently it's a blue moon.
A seasonal blue moon.
Seasonal blue moon.
Four blue moons in this season, I guess.
Yeah, going to be a good show. I'm looking forward to it.
So tonight we're going to be talking about some metaphysical news. We're also going to be talking about the topics of guilt, shame, and grief, how to deal with those. And we are glad that you could join us. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly program, we also operate Metaphysics Institute, or as it's officially called, the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, a premier metaphysics university where you can earn your bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in a variety of specializations. For more information, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Before we get into our regular show, we'll do our profession of beliefs as usual. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based upon 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number 1, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number 4, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both a physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number 7, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these 3 synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number 8, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. And number 9, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on MCHS Church, please visit mchschurch.org. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's good to see those of you who are joining us live. We also welcome those who are listening to the archive. Appreciate you taking your time out for this broadcast. If you'd like to make a comment during our show tonight, if you're a live listener, you're welcome to do so in the chat room, or you can call in. Numbers are on your screen. Dr. John Hightower taking your calls and routing you to us. So if you'd like to spice it up, give us a call, and we can talk. So tonight, again, we're going to talk about metaphysical news, some interesting stories in the news, and a little bit later we're going to talk about how to deal with guilt, shame, and grief. So Dr. Vicki has got her list. Her list.
Yep, I do.
Of stuff. So we're going to go by that list.
Let's start out with all the for all the cryptoid fans. Is that how you say it, Doug?
Cryptid? Cryptozoology, yeah. Cryptid
yeah.
fans. They're kind of crypto. Cryptid. They're kind of creepy. I mean cryptid.
That too. Well, you know, we'll just start out in a light note here tonight. There's... finally, a list of animals that most people don't know exist. So, you know, when you're out there in the forest and you think you're, you know, chasing new kinds of species, you're not. For
well,
instance,
you might.
You might, that's true. Raccoon dog. I've never seen the likes of this before, but it's pretty interesting. The snub-nosed monkey. And there's a thing called a Patagonian mara, which kind of looks like a jackrabbit kangaroo kind of cross. Now, there's some really interesting pictures on the net. You can go to Metaphysical News, by the way, and everyone, on either IMHS or MCHSChurch.org. And
yeah, look for the widget. Look for the Metaphysical News widget.
That's right, and you can click on any one of these stories we're going to talk about tonight. But there's this new kind of dolphin, the Irrawaddy dolphin, really interesting. And then there's this southern right whale dolphin, fascinating. What kind of creeps me out is this Yeti crab. You know, it's like this really hairy thing.
Yeah, that's odd looking.
It is. And there's this Amazonian royal flycatcher bird. It's actually quite interesting. You know, just going through a few of these, the pacu fish, it has what looks like human teeth. That's creepy.
I know, that is weird looking.
Whoa. There's a red-lipped bat fish. And of course, saving the best for last at this point, the naked mole rat. This is by far the ugliest animal I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Poor thing. But they're really quite fascinating. One of the things about this rat, it's used in cancer research because of the study of aging. It doesn't age. It actually does not age. They live up to 28 years, which is unheard of for a mammal. And what else? It remains young, healthy, and fully fertile for almost all of its days. It's kind of weird, but it's a very, very fascinating. So there's a whole bunch of new animals out there.
I'm a mammal, and I'm older than 28. I'm 29.
There you go.
Hey, now, and before you leave the story, though, let me comment. Are you
all
ready to leave it?
Sure, yeah, whenever you're ready.
Oh, well, I just didn't want to cut you off, so if you have more to say about it, go for it, and then I'll speak.
No, I'm going to go on to another.
Then I shall speak. The Doug will speaketh. I find these cryptozoology stories or news stories, these findings, fascinating because it just goes to show there's still animals out there being discovered. I mean, there's about 15,000 new species of all kinds, not just mammals, but all kinds discovered every year on average. And these are just some of the recent discoveries. So, you know, there are potentially more animals that we have not discovered than we have discovered by some scientists' estimates. So just goes to show that, hey, keep your eyes open.
But you have to be careful when you watch the Discovery Channel.
Oh, yeah. Go for
it. This is obscene. I'm so distressed. I almost got suckered for this story. A megalodon.
Megalodon, right?
Oh.
Megalodon shark.
There we go. There's this whole documentary going on out there about life underwater and these...
Mermaids or mer people.
Yeah. But it's all a hoax. Even by Discovery Channel standards, this is really bad. So, you know, so even when we, here's the point, is even when we do think that stories are credible, we have to be very careful. So.
Well, yeah, so just in case you watch is it History Channel or Discovery Channel? I forget which.
Discovery, yeah.
I think they might even be owned by the same. But anyway, just in case you watched the Megalodon Shark documentary on Shark Week here a week or two ago, or if you saw a few months ago or a month or whatever it was on the mer people, mermaids and mermen and that sort of thing, those were both, and they had disclaimers on them too, those were both not real. But they were made, they were presented as real. So, I mean, it's got a lot of serious researchers a little bit peeved because they presented like the Megalodon as real. I watched it thinking it was real. And then I caught this story online. I didn't see the disclaimer. I don't know if I came in late or where it was, but maybe it was right before, you know, after commercial break and I sped through it or something. I don't know, but just FYI.
Now, there's another story while we're on this whole cryptid subject. Another story that came out beginning of August this month that was released. There's a so-called monster hunter, John Downs, had apparently been recording for Bigfoot, and he came across a lot of really interesting phenomena with his batteries and sounds. And even though, you know, his batteries usually last up to half an hour, they were lasting 3 minutes before failing. But he also got a lot of really interesting readings off of his equipment when he's out. So what's the point of it all? I'm not sure, except that there's things in nature that you can read the story, by the way, Bigfoot and electronic interference. Again, go to Metaphysical News.
Well, there's some interesting correlations. Obviously, one of the big things with paranormal investigations is that often batteries don't last very long. I've had it happen to me, not very often, but it has happened to me on paranormal investigations where the batteries normally last an hour, like in a video camera or something, and they'll go in 10 minutes or something. We've had it happen, again, and a lot of people have had it happen. And then, the speculation is that the spirits are draining the batteries. You know, they're using it to try to manifest or whatever. They're just draining them. I've also heard about it connected with ufology and abductions, but to see this related to Bigfoot is interesting. And I'm going to just comment on a couple of I don't know. I'll comment on it and then play the devil's advocate. You know, there's no biological life form that we're really aware of that will drain a battery. I mean, you can have a battery and around people or animals, they don't get drained. So why were they drained around this Bigfoot investigation? Well, you know, we can speculate that implies that Bigfoot may not be a living flesh and blood animal, or at least the one this guy was after. You know, is that true? Do I believe that? I don't know. I don't have any evidence for that, but it's an interesting speculation. Plus, that would also kind of dovetail into some of these Bigfoot sightings that have been connected with UFO sightings at the same time. These Bigfoot have red eyes and so forth. And don't think that Bigfoots, they're more mammals. They're primates. They don't have the eye shine, you know, like humans. Our eyes don't shine. At least that's some of the speculation. Now, the other side of this coin, the devil's advocate side, is that this story is just not what it seems. You know, I don't know the person, but we also have to take into account that there were other reasons for the battery drain and had nothing to do with any Bigfoots that were in the area. That's my 2 cents. Okay, maybe 2.5 cents.
Well, I think it's really exciting that we're continuing research, and that's the whole point of our Metaphysical News, you know, Wednesday night once a month, is to kind of share that there's always new discoveries going on. I mean, I just find it fascinating. I'm always reading anyway, but to bring it onto the show and talk about it, it's kind of exciting, and we hope that, you know, obviously our listeners enjoy it too. You know, there's a story out of, it's another story this month. The headline reads, "The Storm God Enters the Sky." I just have to be a little dramatic, Doug. I love it. Archaeologists have uncovered a 1,400-year-old sculpture of Mayan gods in Guatemala. Now, the significance of this is a whole period of history nobody knew about, and in the class system. And, you know, well, we have talked in past about how many of these, you know, wonderful places are getting trashed by, you know, big corporations. This one in particular is being protected and preserved by the government, and they're doing more research. So it just opens up a whole new dynasty. As I'm understanding here, you know, around 300 to 550 AD and afterward. So just, it's fascinating, the things that we can mm-hmm. uncover under the ground and around that, if things that have been grown over. I mean, there's pyramids under what we think are hills, you know, because stuff is grown over. And then to find out that there's something under there is very exciting. But this particular find just opens up a whole class system and a whole culture that nobody knew about.
Well, gosh, there's so much of our history that nobody knows about. There's been civilizations that have come and gone and without leaving any record or leaving very scant record. And, you know, and then there's always the forbidden archaeology. Michael, I know his last name as well as I know my own, but I can't think of my own last name either right now. But anyway, look up forbidden archaeology. We had him on the show on Paranexus Universe a few years ago. And there's so many sites that are far older than what we normally would recognize as civilization being around. What is that? Goan Tepe? I can't even remember that name. Boy, I need drugs or something. Anyway, they're 14,000 years old, and how they deal, you know, lifted these and sculpted these giant heavy stones to make things work. There's so much fascinating stuff about archaeology that we just don't know how they did it. And, you know, there's lots of speculation how they did it. The aliens helped them or whatever. But there's just a lot of fascinating history that we're not aware of. And it's unfortunate. Of course, if the library at Alexandria hadn't been burned out, then we've known a lot more, I'm sure.
Well, you know, you mentioned a key word, aliens.
Yeah.
I think this next story... And I have to confess, I have not read the whole story, so you're going to have to help me out here, Doug. But this is so alien, it's wild. Just changing the topic here, scientists freeze light for an entire minute. Now, my, you know, overview of this is that they can keep it still for 16 seconds using cold atoms. Now, I think this is really significant.
Well, yeah, I mean, gosh, can you imagine trying to stop, freeze light from moving? I mean, it's kind of awesome.
And its relationship to time, I'm thinking, time and space.
I have to go to the article and look it up to refresh my memory. But
it starts, and what could prove to be a major breakthrough in quantum memory storage and information processing. Mm. These German researchers have frozen the fastest thing in the universe, light. And they did so for a record-breaking 1 minute. So it's and again, if anybody wants to read the whole article, please go to our Metaphysical News on our school site and the church site. But that is what I call really fascinating, which lends me to this next story that... scientists are actually beginning to measure near-death experience. And there's new research into near-death experience. And I know, well, actually, there's a couple of stories here, but because I have so many pulled up, I'm just going to hang on 1 second. One thing about it's really about measuring the brain. There's a couple of stories, and I'm going to kind of pull them all into one, and the brain's activities, and how much it has to do with weight and frequency, and that actually the brain may contain what they believe is that other energy. You know, it's like taking that whole measure of the soul an extra step further, and beginning to actually measure it by weight and frequency. So that's a fascinating story too. So, you know, I mean, science is doing all kinds of stuff, Doug. Do you have mm-hmm. anything you want to add to that story in particular?
If it's the one that's off of our Metaphysical News site,
yep.
There's some new research that they're trying to explain near-death experiences with. This article that's listed there is not the new research. It's talking about the new research. But that new research that they're referring to, that you can look that up too if you want, it's basically just saying that, you know, there's neurons misfiring and so on and so forth. More of the same old, you know, near-death experiences can be explained in a physical way. They're not anything special. They're nothing supernatural. They're nothing about people going on, you know, or going somewhere. And the fact of the matter is that new research is not enough. And if you look into near-death experiences, and especially shared death experiences, where the people who experience the near-death phenomena are not the ones who are dying. There's actually a relative who is dying and has died, and the people around them experience part of that with that person. And it's been documented by doctors and nurses, and it's written about and coined again by Dr. Raymond Moody in Glimpses of Eternity. That's a great book. You should look it up or get it. It's on shared death experiences, and you can explain away, you know, misfiring neurons and oxygen deprivation of the brain with healthy people who are experiencing this. Plus, there's so many similar stories from around the world from people who don't need to know each other from different cultures that there's something to it. And it's just, you know, the research that the scientists have done, you know, I appreciate it, but it just goes back to the same old scientific, closed-minded stuff that, you know, is not getting us anywhere. It's you got to look at all of the evidence. In fact, one of the things these scientists should be asking is, what are the facts and what do those facts tell us? Peter Sturrock wrote that. He's a scientist. What are the facts? What do those facts tell us? Well, there's a lot more to the story than just explaining it away with misfiring neurons and oxygen deprivation. That's all I got to say.
What about the theory that the soul weighs, 5 grams or 7 grams or something?
That's been actually discounted. It's
don't disappoint me.
I know.
Really?
Well, this happened decades back in the early 1900s where this one scientist was trying to measure the soul, and it's, if you look it up, you can do online research about how much does a soul weigh, that type of thing, and it's just been a bit discounted. And I mean, if you think about it, does energy weigh anything? You know, and if the consciousness or the soul is energy, then, you know,
freezing light.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying that it's impossible or not valid. I'm just saying that the research that this fellow did 100 years ago is it doesn't quite stand up to modern methods. So you can't put a lot of stock in it. Doesn't mean it couldn't be done. I'm just saying that particular research was.
Well, tell me, how do you feel about this next story, Doug? Okay. NASA investigating warp drive. They're investigating warp drive. It doesn't say they have it. But they're looking into it now, and there's this Dr. White, apparently, who is aiming to demonstrate the effects of the warp bubble kind of concept.
Right, right. What they're doing, the concept of warp drive is interesting. I love it. I mean, it's been on some documentaries, too. And the reason, because a lot of people think, well, gee, you know, like in Star Trek, they go warp drive, they go faster than the speed of light. Well, how is it that time doesn't change? You know, because with
E equals M.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway, E is equal to MC squared. That means that when you approach the speed of light, you essentially travel through time, you know. The people you left behind, or the time goes a lot faster when you come back, you know, depending on how long you were at the speed of light, centuries may have passed. Well, how is it that warp drive doesn't do that? And the interesting approach to this is that when you create this warp bubble, warp field, what you're doing is you're essentially staying still. Like if you have a ship with warp drive, you're staying still. You're standing still in space. The ship is still. It's space that's moving, not the ship through space. It's space that's moving around the ship. So you create, it's almost like a low pressure in front and high pressure in back, and then, you know, space is moved. So that's why, that's how the whole warp thing works, and it's why you don't have to worry about time travel.
fascinating. It really is fascinating. Area 51 is officially acknowledged. But
that was kind of funny.
But no aliens. That's what they're saying now.
They say.
Yeah. But it's official. It exists. It's been mapped out in newly released documents.
Well, somebody better tell Google that, you know, about it, because, you know, Google Images and all these others have had pictures of Area 51 for years on there. It's kind of funny, though. Yeah, no, there's it doesn't exist. I don't know what Google's showing, but that's not nothing. There's nothing out there. Oh.
Actually, I've seen some recent pictures, too, off of Google, you know, these interesting new shapes down there in Area 51. But it's good to know that CNN has finally acknowledged or been allowed to report. Oh, geez, did I say that out loud? Yeah, but they're, just for the record, everybody, they're saying no aliens.
Yeah.
There is an Area 51, but there are no aliens. So
darn it.
We have it on record. Oh, geez. You know, I don't know if some people just run out of things to talk about. We obviously are.
Well, the bigger thing is that, you know, the government, obviously, not the whole government, the factions of government take us for stupid. I mean, we all know Area 51 is there. It's like, let's talk about the elephant in the room, okay? What elephant? You know, and it's just funny. It's like, what really amazes me about all this kind of thing, oh, we don't want to acknowledge that secret base. It's like they take them so seriously. And it's like around the world, it's just like all these countries, like little boys in a sandbox fighting over their little corner. And, oh, we need to protect the sheeple out there because they just couldn't deal with the fact that aliens exist and are visiting this planet and that there are other civilizations too numerous to even count in the universe. We need to protect these poor people just so that they don't, you know, have a conniption fit and society fall apart and they don't give credit to human beings. I mean, I was just reading the other day where a poll, it might even be on the Metaphysical News somewhere too, that, you know, they did a research project and discovered that 80% of people would have said that their life would not change any, including theologian or religious people. Their life really wouldn't change all that much to, you know, if the announcement was made that alien life exists. So
they still have to pay their bills.
Yeah, I know. You got to pay your, life goes on. Yeah. We all know alien life exists. It would really take somebody who is very close-minded, very shallow, and you know, if I offend anybody, sorry, wake up. You know, come on. You know, with 100 billion galaxies in this universe, that's just all that we've counted so far. There's nothing else out there? Oh, come on, really? Come on. And they're not here? There's way too many credible reports. Gosh, it's time to wake up and it just is what it is, folks. I mean, they're here. They obviously don't want to conquer us, otherwise they would have, so don't have to worry about much there.
Well, I actually think people might smarten up. if the big announcement was made, yeah, okay, there's something going on here. I think people might kind of pay attention and to their lives, and it would put a whole new slant on things, I think. Okay, life wouldn't change. You still got to eat. You still got to pay your mortgage and blah, blah, but or your rent. But I think that that new kind of interaction, Doug, I think would maybe, I would hope, make people less violent. That would be my hope.
I would hope so, too.
Well, you know, this is a bit of a segue. We're coming up to a little story here that's going to segue into our topic this evening that I'm going to talk about shortly. And this was just released. A headline reads, only 1 in 4 people, ACT test takers, have college or career skills. I would like people to know that it's been known for quite a while, like the last number of years, that about 50% of the population, and certainly we're talking about Western civilization, has about a 50% what they call functional illiteracy, meaning they're functionally illiterate to today's standard of language and communications, and it's a huge number. But this particular story is even more affirming that people are just not getting what they need to for skills in school to be able to move forward in their life, and they're not ready for life after school. So, I think that what happens when people can't keep up and they can't compete, whether it's because they have a really good capacity to read and write, or they think they're skilled and they can't move on, or emotional problems and such, there's a lot of guilt and a lot of shame, a lot of secrecy, and there's a lot of compensation that goes with that, a bravado, if you will, that people put on to compensate for other insecurities. So this is a huge indicator that we have some really big underlying currents of problems with people. And, this is, Doug, this is where I'm going to get you to, take it from here into tonight's topic.
Well, that story about, 25% of high school students only having what they need to get on in life is unfortunate, but it's also expected. I mean, if you look at the country, you look at areas where there's higher crime rates, if you look at those three 15, those kids that just gunned down that Australian baseball player a few days ago, for no good reason, because they were bored, because they needed something to do. Well, where's our educational system? I'm not going to blame it all on that. Obviously, there's a lot of factors that go in here, but we need to be teaching our children things that give them skills, that help them to grow. And the school systems are not doing that, The school systems are not. That's why IMHS exists, Metaphysics Institute. It teaches life skills. It teaches you to have a mission, to have a purpose, to have meaning, discover what that is, and to be about doing good, be about leaving the woodpile higher than you found it, not just, shooting people running on the side of the road, jogging on the side of the road for no good reason. So we need to continue to educate, and that's one of our principles of belief. Number eight, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human condition, or human spirit rather, enhancing the human condition. We need to educate. That's what we're in the business of doing. That's why this radio program exists. It's why IMHS exists, to help educate people. And it's just one person at a time, trying to change those lives.
If I can just inject here, Doug, there's a comment in the chat right now that a lot of this undereducation is because of poverty and resources and parenting. While those things may be relative, I'm going to say attitude is the bigger problem.
It is.
100 years ago, how did people get an education? It's because they actually were enthusiastic. And they wanted to learn, and there was a whole different attitude about expanding one's own mind for one's own sake. And so if I'm going to nail anything, I'm going to tell you, I think we've lost a sensitivity for one another, and we've lost a compassion, we've lost it's enthusiasm, It's like great to learn that stuff. Isn't that wonderful to learn? And, what did you learn today? And we've lost that interest in each other. Because no matter how impoverished, no matter what lack of resources, and parenting, sure, but not all parents are up at that. I think every parent sends their kids to school hoping that they're going to learn something. But people are busy. People are, when you are occupied with money, and putting food on the table, it's really difficult to, find enthusiasm. I know that. But this is what, of all the things, to spend 1 hour a night with your kid, it can change the life of the parent and the child. So it's about attitude. That's my take on it.
Good. So we got less than 10 minutes left. Let's talk about how to deal with guilt, shame, and grief. First of all, we'll talk about guilt and shame. You know, guilt's about basically means you feel bad about something you did, whereas shame means you feel bad about yourself. And a lot of people harbor guilt and shame. And think about that word harbor. You know, it's like a safe harbor for ships. You know, ships coming off the sea, there's a harbor there. It shields them from the weather, from the waves and so forth. It's a safe harbor. A lot of folks harbor guilt and they harbor shame. It's almost like they need their guilt. They need their shame. And it's unhealthy. And as I've said many times before, never forget this. There is no value in guilt, period. You know, we always wish we could make today's decision with tomorrow's experience and knowledge, but that's not how life works. So if you think about it, what are you carrying guilt over? You know, what's your guilty feelings over? You may have regrets. There's nothing wrong so much with regret because it can help us to change and be better tomorrow. But guilt is a whole different story. Guilt will eat away at you like cancer from the inside. It will eat away at your spirit. And so you really have to get the upper hand on it. If you are carrying guilt, stop it. You know, you've got to understand and not take yourself overly seriously, but you have to understand that we're all doing the best we can with the knowledge, experience, and resources that we have at the moment. We cannot make today's decisions with tomorrow's knowledge and experience. Just can't. And so the only time we feel guilt is when we go a little bit further ahead from the moment and realize, oops, I blew it, or I did this, or I did that, or I should have done this, didn't do that, whatever. You have to give yourself a break. Learn the lesson, make amends if necessary, move forward guilt-free. The same as with shame. You know, it's like there's always a reason to feel bad about yourself. Well, stop that. There's no good reason to feel bad about yourself. Now, we'll tell you that if you were guilty of crimes against humanity, or if you're guilty of shooting a jogger in the back for no good reason, you know, yeah, feel guilty. Let it eat you alive. But most of us don't have that. You know, are there times when, here's another thing, you go back to childhood, and we did things when we were kids, and we feel guilty about them as adults. Oh, come on, you know. We were children. We were learning. We were trying to figure it out. You can't be too difficult on yourself there. So give yourself a break. Learn the lessons. Move on guilt-free. You can't carry it. It'll eat you alive, guilt or shame. Another area is grief. You know, a lot of times they're related. Grief could be related to guilt. I feel guilty and I'm grieving or whatever. But there's also grief associated with the loss of a loved one. We all have that. We all, you know, an animal, we all have to deal with these things. And that's just part of the human story, part of the human condition. We have the grief. We lose somebody. And how do you get past that? It's tough. And there can be varying degrees of grief. It depends on what the loss was. It just depends on circumstances. If you are grieving over the loss of a loved one, friend, whatever, you know, you can take some comfort in the concept that, and I know this may sound cliche, but it's really true, that they're in a better place, that they've moved on, and that this is not the end, and that you will see them again. It's comforting. It's hopeful. And I'm not just basing that on some kind of pipe dream or something that just we pulled out of the air. The fact of the matter is we have near-death experiences, shared death experiences. We have the survival hypothesis, which is based on the first law of thermodynamics, which states that energy cannot be destroyed or created. It can only be transformed. And so where does our energy go? It must go somewhere. And does it go somewhere in a coherent fashion, or is it just, you know, split up into senseless, pointless atoms? Well, the reasonable conclusion is that it remains coherent because we have these NDE experiences. We have shared death experiences. We have the evidence that we cannot deny from paranormal investigations, from various things. We have too many credible examples where there was unfinished business and the person's spirit, you know, needed to get a message to the loved ones who survived them. There are too many stories like that that are credible. I mean, there's a lot of BS out there too, folks, but there are too many of these credible stories that just you can't explain any other way. So if you're grieving for someone, that's fine. Do this. When you feel that grief coming on, feel it for all it's worth. Take a few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, cry your eyes out, grieve, feel it, experience it, touch it, hold it, caress it. And once you're done, let it go. Release it. Release that energy and visualize you know, open your hand and release it. I release it. You say that out loud. I release it. And change the channel in your mind. Think about something different, something positive, something upbeat. The next time that grief comes around, do the same thing. Feel it for all it's worth. Give yourself 5 or 10 minutes, whatever it takes. Then release it. Move on. Change the channel. Think of something positive. You know, busy yourself with helping others in some way, with just service. And it eventually the grief will fade. It will become manageable. And you will move on with your life. Those are some tips on dealing with grief.
Well, if I can add something in there, Doug. I've dealt with a lot of grief, not only of my own, but others in my time. And the brain is an interesting mechanism. And the clock factor is huge. And I call this part of it emotional management. 10 minutes. So if you feel that coming on, you give it 10 minutes. And as soon as that 10 minutes is over, as you say, Doug, change the channel. You go do something physical, dishes, make sandwiches for your kids, you know, something else. And if it's coming on again, that could be in a half hour, an hour. Again, let her rip, and 10 minutes. And you learn to live with pain. It's something that's very real, and it does get less frequent. It becomes more manageable, but you now are the emotional manager of your own pain. Loss is a very real thing, but we live here, and we have to still keep going, and people rely on us. We're, you know, interdependent in that way. So I hope that helps.
And that's a good point, too. You know, a lot of times we lose somebody close to us, and we don't know how we're going to go on without them. Well, what if the roles were reversed? What if you were the one who died? What would you want for the other person, say a partner? What would you want for them? Would you want them to basically end up having a meaningless life held up in grief? Or would you want them to just move forward and make the most of it, have a happy life? I think we'd all agree that's what we'd want. And it's understandable to know that the person who died would want you to have that too. Have a meaningful life. Dignify their memory by making a difference in this world, because you'll see them soon enough. That's true. So
good
anyway,
stuff.
Hope, good
show.
Hope it helped. Good points tonight. We'll have another show next week. We are still working on a guest and so forth, but we'll post it on the website as soon as we have something. We appreciate the time you've taken to join us on this live show or the archive. We appreciate your time. Tell others about it. We're trying to make a difference here. Join us. Visit mchschurch.org. You know, do your part there, or hey, enroll at IMHS, metaphysicsinstitute.org, and let's do this together. Let's make a difference together. So until next week, encourage you to listen, think, learn, live, and grow. Folks, have a great week. Good night.
Good night.